Ladies and gentlemen, when Pascal beckons, we all come. Huh? That's a rule among the international organizations. And we are delighted to be here now for the second time on the subject of aid for trade. In your boxes there, some of you may not have opened it, but you have the actual main document, which is the Aid for Trade 2009. It's called Maintaining Momentum. And of course, for ministers and public officials who are very busy, you have the forward and the executive summary. But for those who are gluttons for punishment, you have the country and agency chapters, you know, one by one, institution by institution, blow by blow, which sustains the main conclusions that you see in the documentation. This adds to the regular reporting on aid and on a first report that is being done now on multilateral aid, which is always a country aid. This is the first report that we're putting out on multilateral aid. Pascal was saying we are not the agency to deal with aid flows. Well, the DAC at the OECD is one of the places, not the only one. And I have to say that perhaps, Pascal, you don't want to take ownership of this, but this Aid for Trade is a success story, and I want to congratulate you for that. This, we will see why. It's my great pleasure to present this second OECD WTO monitoring report on aid for trade. And I emphasize in OECD WTO, it's simply because it's in alphabetical order. The publication is opened by a proverb that the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago and the second best time is now. This is appropriate as a tree, especially a fruit-bearing one, is a fitting metaphor for the benefits that countries can reap from outward-looking growth strategies. But it is easier said than done. Low-income countries often lack the basic capacity, be it in terms of policies, institutions, or infrastructures, to exploit the opportunities that more open markets present and to trade out of poverty. The goal of the Aid for Trade initiative is to help them develop this capacity. Now, this is more important than ever in the current context, as developing countries have been hit hard by the crisis. I was speaking to Mr. Kaberuka, the head of the African Development Bank. Dominique Strauss-Kahn invited us a few months ago to visit Tanzania for a meeting with all the ministers there, and we've been working on the African Economic Outlook publication that we put out every year with the African Development Bank, and clearly what we have is a very, very serious stress on the poorest countries, Africa in particular. Africa is resilient and showing a lot of capacity to resist, but this is not their doing, like it is not the doing of developing countries in general, but they are feeling the brunt of the crisis. And we should take that into consideration in our policies. Commodity prices have dropped, other than the overall drop in trade that Mr. Lamy mentioned. Trade finance dried up, remittances declined, and any effort to bring the world back to shape has to include a major element of rebalancing transfers to developing countries. Aid for Trade is a clear example of these short-term measures that have long-term impact. It is a classic double dividend that we have been promoting as good practices to get us out of the crisis. The Aid for Trade initiative, Mr. Lamy, friends, is alive, is well, is growing. Can we term it a success? I would say yes, so far, but of course, we are just beginning. Since its inception, partner countries have increasingly prioritized trade in their development strategies, and donors have responded with aid to help them overcome their supply-side constraints. OECD and WTO have been working together closely to monitor how this is taking shape. Allow me to highlight some of the findings. Between 2005 and 2007, AFER trade flows have grown by about 20% in real terms. Total new concessional commitments which qualify as aid for trade. And I say this because when we launched the concept of aid for trade, then everything became aid for trade. Every bit of aid qualified, or we were asked to qualify it as aid for trade. Obviously, this is not the case. So in the concessional commitments which qualify as aid for trade, they reach more than $25 billion. Funding for global and regional programs identified as an area requiring special attention more than doubled in this period. Preliminary data for 2008 shows a continued increase on the aid for trade flows. We're updating the data. It's difficult to say what's happening in 2009. We have, of course, the pressure of the crisis, but we hope that the positive momentum continues. On top of that, non-concessional lending from multilaterals and regional organizations had added a further $27 billion to the trade-related financing. So you really are talking about $52 billion that was committed to the supply side of on developing countries to eliminate the constraints on the supply side. Even more important is that we have seen surprisingly high disbursement rates on aid-for-trade projects and programs. This is of enormous importance. Those of us who have been familiar with projects and programs with the different development banks around the world, the question of disbursement becomes a very important criteria whether we are being successful or not. In aid for trade programs, the disbursement rate has been very high, I would say surprisingly high. Now, partner countries are increasingly taking ownership of the aid for trade initiative. In this exercise, 2 years ago, 7 partner countries responded to the questionnaire. This year, almost 90 countries participated in the monitoring exercise, and the majority of these countries assessed that they are mainstreaming trade in their developing strategies. This effort should continue. In the context of the economic crisis and given the competing claims on limited donor resources, the increased engagement by partner countries will help secure continued funding of the aid for trade priorities. But donors are also responding. Last time when we reported, there were 43 donors. Now we have 57 bilaterals and also multilateral donors. And aid for trade is becoming a mainstream in their aid programs. Now, we have seen that health flows are holding, education flows are holding, and it was said here that that perhaps this is being additional. I think we should strive for that. We should make sure that aid for trade is not a substitute of flows that were already being channeled and simply now have a different name. The crisis is conspiring against this, and we should be very, very vigilant. The donors, we ask you please take a hard look at this so that we're not recycling the same amounts of money. The idea of aid for trade was precisely to provide additionality. Donors are complying substantially with their Hong Kong aid for trade pledges. They have also pledged to maintain the aid flows. We have written, myself and the head of the DAC, to the leaders of the countries that are providing most of the aid, and they have all said we will maintain them. They also said so in the G20, and they've made a number of pledges so far. So we hope that they maintain. But the problem is, if anything, with the crisis, the needs of the poorest countries in the world, including the Africans, have increased. So perhaps just maintaining would not be enough under normal conditions. The crisis, again, makes this difficult, but it also should be an encouragement for us to do better. So the second monitoring exercise is putting a spotlight on a number of positive developments. Coordination and delivery mechanisms are better. They're better oiled, if you will. Aid is now more predictable and sustainable. We're getting reports about, yes, I intend to provide this year, perhaps next year, and even 2 or 3 years. This was non-existent in the past. We're based on partner priorities more and more. That means you, the recipient countries, are the ones who say what it should be for, aligned around their systems, and with much more harmonization among donors, including those from the South. The South-South cooperation is becoming an increasing feature of aid flows, but also of aid for trade in particular. Enhanced accountability has also been increasing. In fact, geometrically, this validates the WTO task force recommendation that the Paris Declaration on Aid Effectiveness should guide the initiative. And better still, donors indicate that they expect their aid for trade allocations to continue to grow over the medium term. Now, for that to happen, we should build on the progress made. We should improve the linking of aid for trade to the wider development agenda and broaden and deepen the aid for trade dialogue. In the first case, of course, we just had the DAC meeting, and they have a plan for action. The action plan links the crisis response to long-term global objectives, and clearly aid for trade plays a big role, a fairly central role in these efforts. When you're talking about the need for dialogue, linking aid for trade to this more inclusive global development agenda also requires broadening and deepening the policy dialogue. We also need to identify the nature and extent of the supply-side constraints, but not in a general, but on a regional, country-by-country, case-by-case basis. Once this is done, we need to show how aid for trade can address these obstacles, working with and adding value to private sector initiatives. This was mentioned here a moment ago by Pascal. This is a natural evolution. First, we needed to know the numbers. Then we are now better informed about the needs. 90 countries on the recipient side, 57 elements on the donor side. So it means we got substantially all the universe now. And now we're going into what the numbers mean, what the needs are, the project level, the specific project level, sometimes even at the local level, not just at the national level. Where are the bottlenecks? What are the applications that are going to make, that are going to give us more sort of bang for the buck, as the expression goes. So these are, and the private sector, coming in with the private sector. That's, again, the next stage. The private sector has a natural role to play when you're talking about trade issues. And aid for trade, therefore, can play a big role in supporting not only the actual bottlenecks or de-bottlenecking, but also in being some seed money in order to get the private sector in. Ladies and gentlemen, Monsieur Lamy, my friends in the podium here, we believe this initiative can make a real contribution to our common objective of a more inclusive and environmentally sustainable world economy. The OECD will continue to work closely with the WTO to monitor aid for trade. We will collect and synthesize good practices that will help us focus aid for trade on delivering results. We'll also design a common evaluation framework to assess the aid for trade outcomes and impacts in terms of trade capacities, poverty reduction, and environmental sustainability. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I started my speech by saying that the second best time to plant a tree is now. But let us not forget about picking the low-hanging fruit of the trees that were planted a long time ago. Let us maintain momentum and finish what we started in Doha. Let us wrap up successfully the Doha Development Agenda, and through increased trade, help millions of people get out of poverty. Thank you.